higher performance and faster and more reliable.
Everybody, and welcome to Open Paddock episode number 218 for Tuesday, February 11th. Tonight we're going to talk about IndyCar. The National Guard decides where the money should go, and John Barnes gets kicked to the curb. Title sponsor rumors are flying, and Junco's Racing announces its Pro Mazda drivers. In Rally, Jari Matti Latvala capitalizes on Sebastian Ogier's troubles. He takes Rally Sweden and the points lead. And Formula One, testing resumes next week, along with talks over qualification changes and a trio of double points races. So kick back, relax, and enjoy this episode of Open Paddock. But that should go about as smoothly as an Olympic event in Sochi. Hello, everybody, and welcome, welcome. So, Sean joining you this week, as I'm starting to always do again. I can't say that I always do because it's been quite a break. Joining me tonight, I have Mike Weitzel. Say hello.
Good evening, everyone.
Yes, good evening indeed. We also have Jay Douglas Patterson. Hello, sir.
Good evening.
And, of course, because we don't have anybody else who's new on the show, the intern, Mike Shaw.
Okay, how long till I'm not an intern anymore, huh?
Well, somebody else has to come on the show for a full-time basis.
Mike might have more credentials than you at this point, Sean.
I think he does. He's done well. Hey, here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. You need to have more credentials. You got to be out there to impress your hiring, your hiring, the guy who's hiring you, you can't,
Wait. Seriously, don't be mocking the guy that's bringing all the Polish hits to our website. Seriously.
We are number three on Google from Poland, thanks to Mike Shaw. So we are mega stars in Poland. So much like the Top Gear guys are here, I think that we have the same effect in Poland.
Nice.
So, only they can't see us.
That would make you that would make you the hamster.
It would, because I'm the smallest one. and have all the suavest good looks. What? Okay.
Oh.
Maybe not. Maybe I lied. I'm sorry. I mean, let's face
maybe.
It.
Just maybe.
Let's face it. When Doug has the ponytail in full effect and the facial hair, there's no touching it. So.
And the facial hair is coming back. It's growing back.
I know. You should. I was disappointed when I came up there and seen it was not there anymore.
They're like, true son of a man. What the hell did you do with Patterson?
I know, right? Who's this clean-shaven guy? Is this like Barry and Evil Barry?
Barry and Other Barry.
yeah, exactly. Isn't this how we get Ants Other Barry? Why, yes, it is. Okay, so anyways, enough of that. So let's get into the show. And we have to start, obviously, with the beverage lineup. I will go ahead and say that it was a bit of a late-game decision, but I decided to jump in with the Captain Morgan Private Stock rum. So I am quickly becoming a fan of the Captain Morgan rum. Mr. Weitzel, yourself?
Made a trip this weekend down the Jungle Gyms in Cincinnati. Massive international food market and very good beer selection. Was able to pick up a Ballast Point Fathom IPL. IPL, you say?
Oh, yes. That's exactly what I say.
India Pale Ale style lager. Very odd.
So even lighter then.
It's still about 70 IBUs, so it's a good hoppy kick, but it's got a crisper taste than most IPAs. A little less on the heavy hand and a little less bitter, but quite good.
So say, a lager doesn't necessarily mean that it's light.
Fair, but it has a lighter flavor. The lager is the cold fermentation.
Right, right. So it doesn't have the heavy body.
Yeah. So it's a good one. Very tasty. I'm impressed, though, for the price. Yes, it was one of the 650 milliliter bottles, and they like to charge $9 for something like that. And I can't see myself buying a $9 bottle of this stuff again, but it is worth a sip.
So for all of you prospective brewers out there looking for a place to advertise your next creative beer – clearly we're the site to do it. I mean, Mike just gave us a breakdown on what an IPL was and exactly what makes these various types of beers. You can think of no other radio show in the country that's going to give you that kind of depth and knowledge that's not already dedicated to alcohol.
Beer geeks right. with a racing problem.
Exactly. So, yes, we are a racing website. Well, yes, we are a beer website with a racing problem. So, okay, Doug, what are you having, sir?
I have just finished my first tasty vodka and vermouth cocktail.
Ah, so you're having a vodka martini.
No.
Yes, you are.
Do you not Archer Bro?
Not.
That's the only point I think on the face of the world that me and Archer disagree on. So, oh my goodness, I need the book.
Yes, you do. Okay. Yes, you do. It's a fabulous book.
So, how about yourself, Mr. Shaw?
Well, I need something to keep me awake out here, and so I actually went with a coffee with Kahlua and cream.
Oh, very nice.
Ooh, stimulant and a depressant all mixed together.
You need to slip a little Red Bull in that.
Yes. Peel me off the ceiling. Jeez.
Oh, I do have a non-recommendation.
Okay.
I think I may have made this non-recommendation last week, but Sprecher's makes a hard root beer.
Mm, yes, you did.
Steer very clear of the hard root beer.
Oh,
it was awful. No. Excellent. Anyway, moving on.
We will not be talking about Rally tonight because Mike Shaw's heart just exploded in his chest after putting Red Bull in there. Okay, yes, let's move on. We have quite a few things to talk about and not a whole lot of time to talk about them, even though Doug has now just said challenge accepted.
Absolutely.
Let's start off with IndyCar, and oh, man. This will also be part of my weekly soapbox, but we'll get there. IMS made a tweet and a Facebook post that said, "Hey, you guys need to tune in this week. We have a huge announcement." I mean, everybody was excited. Drivers were retweeting it, fans retweeting it. There's a lot of buzz around this announcement for Indianapolis, and with this announcement building, we waited till, what was it, 7 a.m. the next morning, just in time to find out that I believe it's Jason Aldean is
some dude with a cowboy hat.
Yeah, is going to be performing a country concert. And oh, by the way, we also got the reveal and the graphical representation of what the Grand Prix of Indianapolis's trophy will look like, which Mike probably notes in the show notes. Why not the Flying Coxman?
Seriously, I mean, what's wrong? What's wrong with that hardware? Why would
news for that?
Why would you be leaving that in Dario Franchitti's hands?
What, the Flying Coxman retired?
Seriously,
Franchitti,
pull that trophy out of his hands and give it to someone else less deserving.
Yes, well, needless to say, the big announcement was a complete letdown and disappointment because we had been hoping and praying that perhaps this was something that had to do with the actual racing or the racing
car. News from IndyCar.
Yes, yes. And what it actually turned out to be was, in fact, well, we're going to do a really stupid country music concert.
And a picture of a trophy.
Yes, and a picture of a trophy.
Seriously.
I am not one to usually go to an official page and air my grievances on their social media page or to their social media Twitter handle, unless I'm extremely drunk. But I had just woken up, I had just read the news, and I literally, without thinking, went to the post on Facebook and I put, LOL, man, what a huge announcement. I was like, I mean – we couldn't have expected it to really actually do with anything racing, should we? I mean, I just bashed them on their own Facebook page and let them know how stupid of an announcement it really was. Because, again, this goes back to what we were talking about last week, boys. What IndyCar needs to be doing is promoting themselves as a racing championship because it is one of a dying breed in the United States and really across the world where the best driver is the guy who wins the championship. Now, we have that with the Tudor sports car, WEC, and Rally, and whatnot. But I mean, when you're talking like big league motorsports, like really IndyCar comes to mind and is in fact the one championship that hasn't really gimmicked up its points points championship. And again, here we are. Indianapolis Motor Speedway, instead of pimping the Indy 500 and pimping the fact that we have the Grand Prix of Indianapolis, their brainchild, and probably the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life, and now we add to it with a really crappy trophy, sorry for whoever designed it because I knew it was fan-designed, and also now a country music concert that nobody cares about. And yeah, you yet again slip that much further into irrelevancy.
The trophy's probably going to look pretty stunning when they actually reveal the trophy. But when you reveal a picture of a proposed trophy, that's crap. Also crap is spamming my email. Yes, I buy tickets from you. I buy a lot of tickets. I bought 8 tickets this year. And I continue to purchase from their website. However, they have my email and they use it relentlessly. And I can't unsubscribe from everything except ticket news for IndyCar or for my Indianapolis Motor Speedway seats. I get, hey, we've got parking lots available. Pre-purchase your parking lot tickets. Nice. Pre-purchase this. Pre-purchase your bronze badge and blah, 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 blah. It's just one email after another. You're not being good stewards of my email address, and I do believe you're going to get unsubscribed very, very shortly. Mm-hmm. Bad IMS.
Yes, bad. Bad IMS.
Bad IMS. Call me when you actually have exciting news.
Exactly.
Seriously, you send me an email that says exciting news, and I look at it, just the subject line, and I'm thinking, they're probably announcing a concert. I open it up, concert.
Can we just take?
So basically, they're trying to turn this this Grand Prix thing into a country concert that happens to be having a racing event.
Well, I think they're
I think this is Saturday night before the 500 when they're going to run.
Oh, okay. It's just ridiculous either way.
To compete against the the Road to Indy event at
Lucas Oil
IRP, which I will not be attending this year because they will not have a midget component.
Oh, they won't.
No, or at least that's what I heard last. I need to check into that a little bit more. So, don't take it as gospel. Let me hit the USAC schedule.
But Pro Mazda USF 2000, those are good races when it's not raining.
I think I'll go to the little 500 in Anderson.
Ooh.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's a bit of a crazy event.
Well, before we move on to the actual IndyCar racing news, and by that I mean we're still not going to talk about IndyCar yet. Just ponder this. This is so far the off season and the year essentially, and I'm not talking the calendar year. I'm talking since Indianapolis. This is Indianapolis news. Indianapolis Motor Speedway news. Grand Prix of Indy, trophy design contest for Grand Prix of Indy. Changes potentially coming to the month of May in terms of the actual month of May, not the Fox, Fox month of May events. A stupid concert that nobody cares about from a Canadian guy who's more irrelevant than IMS at this point. And also now the reveal of the graphical representation of the Grand Prix of Indianapolis trophy, along with Indianapolis Motor Speedway now being used for vintage races. This, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to leave in your head and your little cranium to think about. You tell me. I mean, some stories just write themselves. I don't even have to waste space on the internet doing it. They just do it to themselves. Anyways, so moving on to IndyCar-related news, we have Alex Tagliani not going to come up with a ride for IndyCar or a sports car, for that matter, to my knowledge. I think – is he still going to be racing with the core guys, or was that a Daytona-only deal? Because I thought – yes, he's expected to race for RSR, not Core, my fault, in the prototype challenge class for the rest of the Tudor United Sports Car Championship. So I didn't read that part. But he is also going to create his own team that looks exactly like Michael Andretti's Andretti Autosport logo. But this is now Tagliani Autosport, and this is going to actually be a number 18 Dodge Challenger NASCAR that will compete in the NASCAR Canadian Tire Series. So he's announced that. The only thing that really matters of this is good on Tags for taking an ownership role. Wish it could have been an IndyCar, but understand the lure that NASCAR has, especially in Canada, and the fact that IndyCar kind of just gives the big middle finger to Canada anymore. And let's take a look at the fact that his logo looks identical to Andretti Autosport. His team name looks identical to Andretti Autosport, except for its replaced name with Tagliani. And I just thought it was really funny when I read it. I was actually had taken more from that than I did the actual announcement of him competing in the nice. NASCAR Summer or the Canadian Tires Championship.
Imitation is the highest form of flattery.
Hey, just saying. Somebody's doing it right. So, what do you think? What do you think, guys? Tagliani owning his own team. Do we like this? Even though it's
a way that Tagliani can be involved in Canadian motorsports, where the majority of the sponsorship comes from. It probably is going to turn out to be a good thing. He's still pursuing about like 5 open IndyCar seats. We'll talk about that later. But he's being mentioned all over the place as potential. Still waiting to see though.
Yeah, it really, I don't know. Seems tough for somebody like Tagliani. You know, you look at a guy who had his own race team with the Fast race team back with when the IndyCar Championship was first starting the whole merger campaign, and that thing pretty much got bought out from underneath him. And now, you know, he's really jobbing, if you will, for motorsport. And I think personally his best chance of really competing and getting the most competition, I think, would be to stay and race in the PC Championship.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Let's go ahead and move on, though, to the National Guard. Be all you can be in the Army Guard. I don't know. I'm in the Air Force, folks. I don't know anything about this Army that you speak of. But let's go ahead.
You were Army Air
Corps?
In World War II.
Yeah, they tried to bring us back into the fold, I think. But unfortunately, new Air Force leadership has prevailed, and we're moving back into the direction of being the Air Force. And in fact, not going to be a part of the Army after all. But talking about the National Guard, and it looks like it's final. Finite. We've been talking about it a long time. The AP reported Thursday they had submitted the winning proposal. We knew weeks in advance, given some kind of insider leak information, if you will, that this was already going to come to fruition. And now Rahal Letterman-Lanigan is now secured National Guard money, which is huge for this team. And really, I think if they can really put together a great driver in the second car, I think that we got a legitimate shot at seeing these guys maybe win races this year.
Hmm.
I really do.
Very interesting, interesting deal that we've had kind of go down with this. Back in the summer, Robin Miller basically said he had a verbal quote from somebody saying that, you know, National Guard was going to go to Rahal instead of John Barnes' little rinky-dink outfit. but moving forward with that, you know, we just didn't hear and didn't hear and didn't hear. And the reason we didn't hear a announcement of it being final was that Barnes launched an appeal, and that appeal took this long to get resolved. The appeal was basically, a third-party company that assesses and determines who gets these National Guard sponsorships or National Guard monies. And the funny thing of how it goes about, this is not a traditional sponsorship in any way, shape, or form. This is the, you know, Panther or Rahal going to the Guard and saying, this is what we're going to do to promote you, because the Guard isn't going to promote your team. They don't have a product really to sell. Nope. What's going on is the team is being used as an advertising venue for the Guard. And what they do, the team has to, Panther, the money has been talked about before, in the order of $10 million and $14 million and even as high as $17 million was what Panther was asking for next season. And the reason being, that's all money that, yes, they have to run the team off of, but they also have to do all the hospitality and sponsorship activation that would normally be done by the sponsor. No, it's being done by the team, because the team's given the money from the Guard, and then they have to run these hospitality events and a special tent at each IndyCar fan zone at each race, various things like that. This third-party group assessed all of the bids, the two bids, specifically Ray Hall Letterman and John Barnes' outfit, Panther Racing. And they determined that Ray Hall Letterman was excellent in almost every category, and Barnes was either good or excellent. And in the end, they just gave the tip to Ray Hall because they were asking for less money to do the same thing.
And that is crucial, because when you look at actually what both sides were looking at, Robin Miller put together a great bit here on Racer talking, given kind of some of the specifics on why, you know, the deal wasn't why it didn't go through. And just as you said, Mike, it's when you've got a team like Panther who's not good, and they
second in Indy 4 years running.
Yeah, second in Indy, and that's about the only thing to boast over the last decade, honestly. You've got a team asking for $17 million. A team asking a strapped, if you will, National Guard for $17 million for subpar performances. You've
really
got a team
for,
like,
what, one race, right?
Yeah, essentially.
I mean, really,
one race. Yeah.
Legitimately, that's all that you can really sell.
Yeah, because that's the only time they're going to be even close, and even then, they're sliding off. You take a team like Ray Hall and Ray Hall's group there that lobbied for it. We're talking about a top-notch professional team that does well on just about every racetrack that they touch, has also run successful programs all over motorsport, and they're asking for $12 million. I mean, it's a slam dunk, people. It's easy decision-making, business 101, advertising 101. I'm not wasting money on a half-assed team who's going to want $17 million when I can pick a world-class team that is actually going to win races when they're only asking for $12 million. I can do it, and they're going to sponsor me or you know, put me on their car. They're going to put me on their clothes, and let's face it, the National Guard is in the business of selling freedom. That's what they do. They go to war. They help people in emergency. They are, like, they're awesome in every way that they perform. And aside of their really bad commercials that still run because they're like a decade old, you know, they need a way to promote themselves and get that recruitment and stay relevant. And this is a perfect opportunity. Now, I will say that I think for even less money, you can take your National Guard sponsorship and pay to run the car in something like the Global Rally Cross Championship, which draws more of the kids that you're kind of looking to sign. I will say that. And also gets you ESPNX Games exposure and the whole lot. But that's neither here nor there. That's a business decision that National Guard has to make. But if they are set on IndyCar and they like what IndyCar offers, it's a slam dunk, people. It's easy. I mean, you'd be an idiot to sign with Panther for $17 million when you can go with a world championship team like Ray Hall for $12 million. I mean, I don't know. Anybody else have anything on that? I mean, I just think it was – I mean, I think it's easy.
I got it in one, sir.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah, I think it's an astute comment on the Global Rallycross or similar series. Just simply because, hey, the demographic that watches IndyCar is an aging demographic. You're
indeed
really not going after your target audience at all. You're making a bunch of old men feel good because they see National Guard sponsorship on the side of a car. That's about it.
Yep.
And that National Guard sponsorship last year,
was off.
It was responsible for firing a perfectly good American driver.
Yeah, you fired
an
American driver.
Maybe part of this decision as well.
Yeah. All I'm saying in the grand scheme of things is you look at the demographics, like you said. In IndyCar, you're talking about a lot of veterans, a lot of guys who've been there, done that. They get nostalgic when they see the National Guard car. They get a little proud because of their commitment. But with what you're trying to do, which essentially is advertise yourself so people will enlist and join the National Guard.
Yeah, you're selling a product. Just in their case, the product is – selling enlistments.
yeah, exactly. And I mean, what you're doing is you need to be looking at going to, like, Global Rallycross. I mean, Rally America, sure, but I think Global Rallycross has got a lot more momentum right now and is a lot more popular amongst the younger demographic, more so than Stage Rally. And I think that we would see a lot more enlistments and a lot more bang for your buck, because you can take that $12 million and put together a world-class Rallycross team. I'm talking, there's no reason anybody in Rallycross needs that kind of money. And you would have a fantastic car, fantastic driver.
You know, Scoot's in that league, right?
Who's that?
Scott Speed.
Scott Speed.
Well,
so you could be buying a new car, you know, every weekend, maybe two.
I didn't say I was going to hire him as a driver.
Well, no, but
dude, I mean, you could eat up that sponsorship money by all the Manny Petties you'd be buying.
Oh. And all I'm saying is,
well, I'm just thinking of the danger of being on track with the sod.
Scott Speed is driving a Volkswagen Bug. Okay,
we'll get to that. Yeah,
we'll get to that. But he's driving a Bug, ladies and gentlemen. I don't
see
him.
Have a flower in the dashboard base.
No, I know. Scott Speed. Yes,
That is the most hideous car I've ever seen. I think it makes the Scion XB rally car look good.
I will say this, though. My daughter, who is a huge Herbie the Love Bug fan, when I showed her that car, her head detonated. There is a mini fangirl head explosion in the vicinity of Whiteman Air Force Base, because she was like, nice. Oh, my. Oh, I'm sorry. How do young girls say it? OMG. Do you see that? So anyways, enough of that. But let's talk testing, boys. IndyCar testing, February coming right along here. We're slowly working our way to the March start here. Or is it June now? I forget. The championship's so short, I don't think it matters when we start. But we do have testing, and it is set to resume this week with four teams projected at Sebring International Raceway. So, Mike, if you will do the honors.
Oh, yeah. Team Penske will be there with Juan Pablo Montoya, Elio Castro. Oh, that's Auto Club Speed. Okay. I got my dates mixed up. At Sonoma, we've got KV Racing Technology, Sebastian Bourdais, and second driver. At the time this article was written was TBD, but that we have determined is Sebastian Saavedra. Also, we've got all kinds of stuff going on. Auto Club Speedway is doing testing. That was last week, that was Monday of this week. Sonoma is February 12th, which would be tomorrow. All kinds of fun stuff going on. Ed Carpenter is going to be involved at Auto Club Speedway and Sonoma. Schmidt Peterson will be at Sonoma. AJ Foyt's going to be at Sonoma. Dale Coyne's going to be at Sebring on February 17th. Sarah Fisher is going to be at Sebring on February 17th. And Brian Herta, again, February 17th. Driver to be determined on Brian Herta, so we may have some more information on that moving forward.
Philippi?
Yeah, most likely.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Well, as you just mentioned, Saavedra is set to test here right soon, and it looks like he could be the guy who's going to go ahead and take that seat at KV, which would mark yet another Dragon Racing defection, as they've already taken Sebastian Bourdais.
Yeah. Wednesday morning, according to Kurt Cavan from the Star, Wednesday morning, Saavedra is going to be announced as KV's second driver alongside Seb. So this could be interesting to see Dragon basically pick up and move their drivers to another team at KV, minus one person who likes to pee on ladies.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Good Lord. He did go there, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry.
No. He did go there. That's why we talk about it.
Ew, I feel dirty.
I need an adult.
Yes, I need an adult. Well, with Saavedra potentially going to KV, that we're still talking about five seats, it looks like, are still in play here with a lot of interesting names out there. Let's see. We're talking about Brian Herta's Autosports first seat. Panther Racing's first seat, or AKA, I think Tony D over at NBC called him the Cleveland Browns of IndyCar, which is funny. And then second seats at Ray Hall, Letterman Lanigan, and KV Racing, and not to be discounted, Dale Coyne Racing, which is one of the things that I here's one of the things that I want to throw out there, and I don't think I'll get in trouble for this, but my question is, where is – there are some names out there, obviously, some IndyCar drivers. Let's just look. We've got we've got Viso, Vaudier, Saavedra, which looks like he's going to be confirmed, Tagliani, Davison, Daly, Townsend Bell, which he's kind of busy but might be able to do the full IndyCar program as well. Catherine Legg, even though she's she's kind of with the Delta Wing guys, Sam Bird, Sage Karam, these names. But here, may I please insert another name for you? Potentially, I haven't heard anything, but what is Martin Plowman doing these days? He's not doing sports car. At least he hasn't been announced sports car yet. This guy is a world endurance champion and 24-hour of Le Mans race winner. Could we not also maybe put his name into the list of guys who could theoretically come over and take one of these seats, seeing as though he is not finalized? I've been talking to him. He has confirmed to me that there are negotiations with teams. But this is the funny thing. Every time I ask the question, is it sports car guys you're talking about or IndyCar guys, he won't respond. And I don't know if that's just because he's trying to, like, I don't know if he's just like, you don't need to know, you don't have a need to know, or we're not talking. But the thing is every time that I ask him this question, there's nothing that comes about. So could we not see him be inserted into one of these seats?
Monster so,
I don't I just because we haven't heard anything about him doesn't mean he's not going to be involved, but it's always a possibility. Methinks, though, he might be announcing his enlistment in the Formula E Drivers Association.
That could be. I guess I never asked him about that.
That'd be an interesting one to find out about. Yeah, these seats that are open, Ray Hall Letterman, pretty much everybody's been saying that's Serbia. KV Racing, we've got Saavedra. So really we're down to Dale Coyne, Brian Herta, and Panther. Panther, was that Philippi there that we're talking about?
Was Philippi a lot.
Oh, no, Panther was Huertas.
Huertas. Yes, yes, Panther was Huertas, maybe.
He had tested twice with the team. So Brian Herta is also a potential open I don't know. I mean, we shall see.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of guys out there. I throw out the Plowman bit on pure speculation and pure guessing, and the fact that I haven't heard anything. But let's see. I don't know. Mike? Mm-hmm. Or not Mike. Mike. Doug, what do you think?
Those are not good rides. Mm-hmm. and I know Plowman's raced for Panther in the past, right? And if it comes down to, okay, you go back to Panther and drive, you're going to have a reasonable shot at the 500. So that's a point in favor above, say, Coyne. But man, it really does have to be between that or sitting on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. Right now I think most of the sports car things are kind of tied up. I mean, we got Sebring coming up next month, mid next month, and so really if you're going to sign a deal, you need to do it quick. You've already missed the big one, the 24 Hours of Daytona, right?
Yeah.
I just don't see a valid sports car thing coming out, unless it's maybe Pirelli World Challenge.
Mm.
Yeah, but that's kind of a step down. As exciting as that series is, it's a step down when you're a 24 Hours of Le Mans race winner,
yes,
and WEC champion.
You're world champion in the LMP2. You are world champion.
Yeah, and you know how does this cat not have a not have a sports car ride? Is beyond me. So I don't know what monster trucks. No, probably not monster trucks.
Robbie Gordon.
Yeah, the stadium truck. There you go. No. I don't know. It's so wacky. And so often it seems that, you know, a lot of these rides, and this is not a slight on the teams. It's just a statement of the way things are in the current climate, is that, you know, talent is really kind of third or fourth order on the job resume. Mm-hmm. You know, the first thing that teams are going to be looking at is how much cash are you bringing, you know, and, you know, how much. Basically, what are you going to do for us financially? Not, are you going to win races for us? Are you a good driver? But what kind of business are you bringing to us? That seems to be the first question. And talent and driving credentials is kind of second. So long as you're not tearing, you know, so long as you're not a Mario Marias, you know, and you're tearing up race cars right and left.
He put on good shows when he ran those few races back in 12, or not 12, I'm sorry, was it 11?
10.
2011 was when he was in IndyCar, I thought.
09 and 10.
Yeah. But regardless, you're right, it is tough, and I'm now mocking him. I'm now mocking him with messages, and he's asking me who I'm selling him to, who I'm selling him off to. Unfortunately, I wish I had the golden tongue to do that. But let's see. Everything seems to be centered around money, and that's actually a perfect segue for our next topic as we move away from the drivers and what's going on here. And that is title sponsor. That's huge these days, and something that the Indianapolis that would help Indianapolis Motor Speedway as well as IndyCar is just kind of pulling in on a title sponsor. Now, at the end of 2013, obviously, Izod was no longer the title sponsor. That's why we refer to it as the IndyCar Series and not the Izod IndyCar Series. And with that, now news is centering around potentially Verizon as obviously the hot name with their relationship with IndyCar. They are looking right now anyways at potentially taking the reins. But Mark Miles says that the series could actually be ready to announce who that title sponsor is as soon as St. Petersburg, which is the opening race March 28th through the 30th. So there is that, Mike.
Now, I'm just curious about this. You know, Mark Miles is talking about it, talking about potentially announcing Verizon as a main sponsor for the IndyCar series. And yet this past week we heard that Verizon's going to sponsor Juan Pablo Montoya for 8 races. That's on top of their sponsorship of Willpower. And I think for the Grand Prix of Indy, all of the Penske cars are going to be carrying Verizon sponsorship. And they just announced a huge deal with Penske. A hugely expanded deal. If they announce as the IndyCar title sponsor on top of that, that is a huge buy-in to the series. It makes me think that Verizon either was who Mark Miles was talking about, but they've lost that possibility, or Mark Miles is talking about someone else. Because if they are buying that much into the IndyCar series, I don't know. I don't see it how it makes a whole lot of sense to be all over Penske's cars, mm-hmm. as well as being the title sponsor of the series.
Right. Well, that's a good point too, because when you look at how we've seen in the past title sponsors act in a kind of sponsoring of the race cars behavior, you know, we've seen Izod obviously sponsoring Ryan Hunter-Reay there for a while. Then they moved to Ryan Briscoe for some time for select races. And now, if it is in fact Verizon who is going to be, you know, that title sponsor, their sponsorship of Montoya for 8 races is indicative. And, you know, we have precedent from before on how title sponsors usually operate, or the title sponsor usually operated through Izod. This could potentially be a move to do that. as you said. So, and like you said, I'll agree, that is massive buy-in to the series. And at that point, I mean, I think that you kind of have to be – I think you have to kind of be excited about that because, I mean, Verizon, they do everything so well. And I don't say that only because I have them as my mobile carrier. I say it because they are, in fact, fantastic at what they do. And, you know, I think that they would bring a lot of credibility to the championship.
Indeed. I mean, they continue with that IndyCar app, and the IndyCar app has been various stages of good or bad over the last few years. But regardless, it is something they use to promote themselves and promote IndyCar, and you know, it works out well. Just curious if they're going to go all in with the IndyCar series. I mean, that's a huge buy-in, so I guess we can hope for it. And you know, it's not like it's not like they're coming into the series not knowing what they're going to get. Mm-hmm. That was Izod. Izod thought they're going to come into the series and get, you know, they're going to do this branding around the IndyCar series and kind of raise the level of the IndyCar series in their branding and, you know, kind of back and forth, and kind of shape the IndyCar series by their branding of it and vice versa. And then Dan Weldon died and they realized, this is a little bit more risky than we thought it was. Verizon's been around for that entire time. Mm-hmm. It's not like they don't know what they're getting into. It would be a very good thing for IndyCar if Verizon does sign on the dotted line to be the series sponsor. Because they're not fly by night, and they've already shown that. Mm-hmm. So that'd be good. Better than sure. Pep Boys, Northern Lights, Izod. Oh, Who else?
Yeah. It's the list is long and not overly distinguished, if you ask me. But that's next race, obviously, the season opener for the IndyCar Series, March 30th at St. Petersburg. We'll be back next week to talk about some of the things that happen in racing and maybe some of these driver seats filling up. But I do want to take this time to give Doug his 30 seconds, which turns into whatever, to talk about Mazda Road to Indy. Doug, we've got some news with a big team in the Pro Mazda Championship has made their drivers known. You've already got it plastered all over the website. So why don't you tell us about who goes racing guys have picked up for this 2014 Pro Mazda Championship.
Well, I suspect this is maybe 2/3 of their program, perhaps only half. In the past, Juncos Racing stalwart in Pro Mazda has fielded four cars. We have two announcements come out today. They've been testing a lot of people, and you know, I would not be surprised to see a couple more. You know, to be honest, one of my expectations is that we may see Spencer Pigot in a Juncos Racing car this coming season. I wouldn't be surprised by that. But anyway, moving on to who is announced, we've seen both of these drivers in Pro Mazda before with Juncos before. The first is Julia Bolero, who was from Argentina. She's the first female Argentinian driver to race in the U.S. She competed with Juncos Racing last season at Trois-Rivières and at Mid-Ohio. Also having experience with Juncos Racing at Mid-Ohio is Jose Gutierrez from Mexico. Both of them, Bolero and Gutierrez, will be full time in the 2014 championship for Juncos. Still waiting who the title sponsor or the primary sponsors for those two cars will be. Likely that Julia's number will be the number 3 and Jose's the number 5. That's what they've ran before. I don't know if they're going to keep those. We don't have official car numbers yet. And last year, do you remember Mario Dominguez from a few years ago and, you know, his sponsorship, Visit Mexico and you know, we've seen other similar types of sponsorships. Diego Ferreira with the Visit Venezuela, the Venezuelan travel sponsorship. I think you're going to see something similar with Bolero and Gutierrez with Argentina and Mexico, respectively. I don't know, though. You know, we're still waiting to hear on that. But anyway, you know, some good development drivers for Juncos. I don't think that you're going to see either one slugging it out for a championship right off the bat. But I don't think you're going to see them pedaling around at the back end of the grid either. I think these are a couple of nice, solid signings for Juncos. And it's a good sign for the series as a whole, which really struggled with car counts last year. As did the Indy Lights, of course. But now we've got, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We got nine cars already confirmed, and we're still a month and a half out from St. Petersburg. Mm-hmm. By the way, it looks like the Juncos Racing crew will make their 2014 competitive debut there at St. Petersburg. I was kind of hoping to see them participate in the Winterfest that's coming up here in a week and a half down at the New Orleans the NOLA. It maybe y'all can help me out with this. This new track that's down in New Orleans. It's either NOLA Motorsports Park. That the abbreviation is how it's branded. But I don't know if you would pronounce it NOLA or New Orleans Louisiana Motorsports. I don't know. But anyway, new motorsports facility down there. Looks very nice. It's getting a lot of attention from a lot of series. The Mazda Road to Indy is heading down there, not this coming weekend, but the weekend after for the Winterfest. I'll have a preview on our show next week.
Okay.
We should see some entry lists, and I suspect we're going to start seeing a lot of driver signings here in the next couple of weeks, both immediately prior and in the weeks after Winterfest. Mm-hmm. This will be cool. And speaking of NOLA, I'm going to go with that someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but it just seems New Orleans Louisiana Motorsports Park is a mouthful, and so I'm just going to call it NOLA. But anyway, the SCCA was down there. Club Racers were down there recently for the Majors Tour, Mid-States Conference Majors Tour. And, I have to give a shout-out to my fellow Kansas City Region folks. David Vincent, Formula 500 driver, took fifth overall in the group and first in class in race number one. Race number two, he ended up coming in second in class to fellow Kansas City Region member Timothy Freest, who had a disappointing race one, but came out to finish fourth overall and first in class, edging out David by a couple of seconds. In EP and FP class, Jesse Prather and Eric Prill won both their classes, both races, and Jesse was first. Well, in fact, they were first and second overall in both races. But get this, these are the Mazda Miata classes. The first race, the difference between the two, the finish differential, was 66 thousandths of a second.
Mm. Wow! Goodness, what are they using for timing to catch that?
Well, just typical timers. I mean, even in solar
racing.
Well, not, yeah. But no, I mean, even in solar racing, we measure out to the thousandths of a second. And yes, races have been determined by the thousandths of a second. I've had conversations on our forum giving lessons in significant digits and in proper rounding because it's mattered for trophies. But anyway, race number two between these two guys. Okay.
Wait. I can see how that discussion goes. This race was won by E to the 0-0-2.
Okay, yes, I did. Nice. I did channel my full inner geek when I wanted to do that. But anyway, okay, so race number one, 66 thousandths of a second, right? Race number two, get this, 24 thousandths of a second difference between the two.
Wow.
Yeah, that I would love to have been there to see that. It would have been fantastic. It would have been fantastic. Spec Racer Ford was by far the largest class last weekend with 25 entries. Chris Funk and Kelly Toombs represented the Kansas City region and did a great job. Kelly was P7, Chris was P4 in race one, and Kelly fell back a little bit in race two to finish P11, but Chris improved his spot by one to finish on the podium in race two. So congratulations to our Kansas City racers doing it proper down there in New Orleans.
All right. Well, fantastic stuff, and well done for the greater Kansas City folks. You have made the Open Paddock headquarters and base of operations that much stronger in the war against slow people. So, all right, well, let's move on from the Mazda Road to Indy. Thank you, Doug. And I guess we could call it the Open Paddock Potpourri section and move on to the rally section because we did have an event there this weekend, multiple events in the rally world. And we'll start with the big one of the weekend, and that was WRC and Rally Sweden. As Mike put, I like that. Mike's just full of good jokes anymore. He is clearly the funniest person that nobody is talking about.
Yeah, Rally Sweden. Well, first of all, there was that live coverage. Did you get a chance to watch any of it?
I didn't. That stupid cable package didn't come with MAV TV. I was so pissed.
Same with mine.
I was talking to Amanda. I was like, okay, so I got to check to see if we get MAV TV. And I was like, I just upgraded my cable package to see if I could get, you know, the Daytona there. And I was like, maybe because I got silver package, that means I'll get MAV TV to watch the rally. And no. That was not
no,
the
you
case.
Need the plutonium package, apparently, right?
Well, there's gold package, and then there's the one that's not listed, and that's actually platinum. And you got to know somebody to know somebody to get into that one. So
just get the platinum package.
No,
you're
you don't
invited to.
Exactly. Yeah, the platinum package is obviously purely on a need-to-know basis from Charter Communications. I am not privy to that information, and also Amanda may or may not have pissed them off when she moved out of her house. Thus, we do not have the platinum package, and I did not get to see the live coverage. But did you? And obviously, you just said that you did not. So let's go ahead and move away from the live coverage and talk about the event.
Yeah, that's too bad. I mean, what I did catch is some thankfully tweeted hacked web streams of some of it. But they did this last year as well, and you know, it's always great. I love the super specials just because it's just always exciting. On the you can see so much of the racing going on and whatnot, so it's always kind of cool. But yeah, so the event itself, well, it was Sweden. It was snowy a little bit. But really after the second pass of the cars going through, they had dug all the way down to where it was a gravel event underneath. So, it runs, along 4 days, starting actually on Wednesday night where they do a super special, at the trotting track. And then they go out to the fourth stages, and then it runs Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Probably one of the most significant things about the whole event was on, Friday, I was listening in, and all of a sudden you hear something you never hear before is, Bexy on the live radio saying, "Oh, Ogier stopped in the stage."
Everybody's like, "What?
What? Who? Are you sure you got the name right?"
Yes, exactly. She's not thinking, right?
One thing about when the snow is that soft, what snow they had, it makes these soft snowbanks. And normally drivers can, like we talked about before, where they kind of bounce off them and whatnot if you know how to drive. Or you can even clip them a little bit and kind of ride along the inside edge. Ogier said that he just made a stupid mistake. He turned in too early into a tight left-hander, got the nose into it a little bit, and it just sucked him right into the snowbank. And he was stuck there for 4 minutes before a bunch of fans helped him to get out. So thankfully there's some spectators nearby. But yeah, 4 minutes completely lost there, which is kind of sad because on Thursday night, they actually had Volkswagen total domination. At the end of Thursday night, it was a Volkswagen 1-2-3. It was Ogier in first, Latvala in second, and Andreas Mikkelsen in third. And talk about turning it on. Andreas Mikkelsen, who last year had said that, you know, I'm just going to be patient. I want to learn the stages, learn the car, and just kind of make my way through. And, you know, the next year, that's when I'll start really trying to show my pace. And he's not lying.
Right.
That young guy, he's quick. You kind of wondered last year because he was so far off the pace from everybody else. But his goal was to finish every event, which he pretty much did. I think the only event did he actually not finish one last year at all? I think he might have had a mechanical difficulty in like a one of them or something like that. But overall, I mean, he reached his goal of finishing every event, getting the pace notes, you know, figured out and all that stuff. And so he just turned up the wick, especially on the stages that he knew on this one. And really most of the event, as far as stage wins go, were Jari-Matti Latvala and Andreas Mikkelsen just back and forth. Ogier was a little pissed about his going to a snowbank, so he had to win the next three stages in a row after that. But so he ended up actually finishing quite a bit farther down the pack in sixth, which is rather unusual for Ogier. But he definitely, you know, started clawing his way back into it, which is kind of cool to see. Just kind of go over the results real quick. It was Latvala that won it. Andreas Mikkelsen ended up in second. He caught up to Latvala. They were getting really close, within 5 seconds of each other. And Mikkelsen ended up having a spin and dropped by about, I think about 30 seconds behind Latvala, and then just kind of decided, I'm just going to hold position there. Mads Osberg ended up taking his Citroen up to third, which he probably could have done better, but and I'm sorry for the Polish Kubica fans, but Kubica kind of sucked at this event.
He sucked hard.
He's not familiar with flying around in the snow, and he had multiple offs, including one on day two. He ended up actually going off twice, and one of those times he got back on right in front of Osberg and ended up slowing him down for a bit, but apparently in that process, because they're down to the gravel, the windshield on Osberg's car was just destroyed by rocks before Kubica moved over. So he was a little pissed off, as you can understand. Mikko Hirvonen ended up in fourth, which is kind of surprising. I really had hopes for Mikko doing a lot better. I figured he'd get more comfortable with the Ford right away after driving the Citroen for 2 years, you know, getting back to his home and a car. He really was in the process of the development and all that. And he just couldn't quite get the rhythm. You know, he still finished a respectable fourth, but I mean, it was over a minute and a half back from Osberg and 2.5 minutes from first. So, I mean, he just kept losing time to the guys in front of him. Other notable finishes, though. Ott Tanak, if you remember him from a couple years ago, he was
yes,
with the Ford squad. He's the Estonian guy that you could hardly get a word out of him at a stage end. He just didn't talk a whole lot. As the Estonians tend to be that way. But Ott really did well. He hasn't driven a WRC car in over a year. He gets in the seat and is in third place at the end of the very first super special on the first night. He gets a stage win and ends up finishing fifth. He hasn't driven a WRC car in over a year and just hops back in the seat and comes out in fifth. That's pretty damn good if you think of the names that he's driving up against.
Oh, yeah.
So that's pretty impressive stuff. Like I said earlier, Ogier ended up in sixth. Henning Solberg in seventh.
Dude, you called that, too. You called that he would be in the top 10 last week. So
yep.
Props.
Henning's just phenomenal.
I love the guy. He's awesome.
He is. And if it wasn't for an issue that he had, he would have finished even better. He had a stage win. Granted, it was one of the short little sprint stages. But, you know, the man was just – he's quick. He just is very quick. What was funny is his brother, Petter, and we all know Petter, was racing in the historic classes in his he's got a Mark II Escort, a classic car, and he ended up winning that event. But after seeing how well Henning was, he was saying that, damn it, I should have actually gone into the WRC and raced one of those. It looked like it was fun. So he felt a little jealous of his brother doing so well, and next time he says maybe he'd end up getting a WRC car. Perhaps. We'd rather see him in more events than just one, but it'd be cool to see that.
Yeah, let's talk about the championship, though, because I think for the first time in a long time, given the results of these drivers and the results of the weekend, the troubles that Ogier had, Lavalle is in the points lead over Ogier. And if you remember last week, I told you if Lavalle was to assert himself in 2014 and be relevant, he had to win this weekend. And he was able to capitalize.
And that's very true, because last year he really didn't show his stuff until very late in the season. It just seemed like he just wasn't getting comfortable with the car. We were all kind of wondering. And, similar to Mickelson, he was just able to turn up the wick and just pushed. And the other thing that was awesome is the fact that VW let the drivers race each other. Yes. They didn't say no team orders at all, and they're going to continue on like that. Of course, we'll see how the end of the season goes if things get close. But yes, Lavalle ends up leading the points by five points over Ogier. So since Ogier only got a sixth, and Lavalle got a win out of this one, good on him.
Yeah.
And then we've got Mads Osberg is now in third place, and Andreas Mikkelsen in fourth. And then we just kind of fall off to Brian Bouffier, Chris Meek, who had some issues. Mika Hirvonen's way back in seventh overall.
Yeah, so the top four, Bouffier, who doesn't even drive for the team.
Number fifth there is Brian Bouffier, who just did the one-off at Monte Carlo. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of interesting to see that. But, you know, it's still early in the season.
Yep.
We'll see how it goes. You know, next event is Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll definitely be go ahead.
Well, the thing that I think is interesting about the championship that could shape up between Lavalle and Ogier is unlike before with Loeb, you always had that like guaranteed like measured response or measured performance in a rally for Sebastian Loeb. But what we see with Lavalle, what we see with Ogier Osberg, is the fact that these guys, you know, Ogier, they all call him the Loeb 2.0. But let's face it, Ogier is, I hate to say it, but he lives on the edge. He's, as they say in Top Gun, you are dangerous. Well, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
He's right on that edge. And he often finds himself over it. So.
That's exactly it. And so one thing that Loeb always says, he does not like driving 100%.
Mm-hmm.
He likes to drive at 90-95%. Of course, his 90-95% is a lot of other people's 100%. But
other people's 120%.
Okay. Fair enough. But, you know, I mean, he hates Sweden as an event. I mean, he's won it a couple of times. But he does not like the amount of commitment and how much you have to push the limits. It's one of the fastest events on the calendar. And he just doesn't like having to push the limit that much. He never liked it in Sweden. Just like he didn't like Finland because you have to push the limit that much. And he just doesn't like that. He likes to, like you said, do the measured approach.
Mm-hmm.
Ogier is a person that thrives on pushing the limit.
Yes, he does.
And Lavalle, when he gets comfortable – it's like there is no limit. That's one thing about Lavalle, about this event, that you saw him suddenly get to this relaxed mode, and kind of like in that terrible movie Driven.
oh, my gosh.
But do you remember that point, though, that, you know, like Sylvester Stallone gets in or whatever, where just everything goes quiet around you, and you just, mm-hmm. you're just going through the motions just because you're so comfortable, everything's tuned just right for you, and you just – it's like there's nobody there, and you're in the zone. And that's what Lavalle was in. He was completely in the zone. He didn't even feel like he was pushing.
Mm-hmm.
And that really was the difference that gave him the win there. And I hope to see more of that with him this season, and to challenge Ogier. I'm still not sure who else is going to be able to challenge Ogier overall for the season. VW is such a damn good car.
Well, yeah, I only think that Latvala is going to be the one that can do it. And the thing that's scary about – the thing that I think when I look at it and I analyze the two drivers that are facing off for the championship, what I see is Ogier, who thrives on the edge. And what happens is he's so early and so quick to be on the edge that Latvala struggles to get comfortable, because almost by default, like when we had Loeb in the rallies, you know, it was like, well, Loeb's going to take opening day advantage or, you know, the first proper day of stages, he's going to, you know, open up a lead and it's going to be tough to overcome. And he just built that fear into you. Whereas with Ogier, he is right out of the gate on the ragged edge, and it's tough for Latvala to get comfortable, because he's all of a sudden has to put himself on that level, or he gets left behind, and he just doesn't have that chance, like you said, to really get comfortable and really settle into the car, which is what he needs to do if he's going to beat Ogier. Because as you've seen this weekend, I mean, the guy was untouchable on stage. It was beautiful driving from Latvala that we're used to seeing at Sweden. But these other places, he's put on the defensive so quickly because Ogier is such on the edge and live by the sword, die by the sword, that Latvala can't really get comfortable. He's got to push right away. And that's just, I think that's the difference that Ogier has that suits him for the championship over Latvala, and that Latvala needs an early kind of issue, like we've seen with Ogier getting stuck in that snowbank, to really get ahead, settle in, and just be comfortable, and then really use that monster Polo car that is just brutally quick. Then he can really extract the most out of that car, and you see performances like we did this weekend. So,
yeah. Other kind of notable things that happened this weekend: issues with the Hyundai. Well, it wasn't so much the problems with the car. It was the drivers hit rocks. When it turned to gravel, they're just road position. There was one specifically with Juho Hannanen where you could see this. There's a fan video, just this giant boulder basically gets dug out from a corner. And he goes along. You can see the car just pop up when it hits it square on. It's like, oh, that's not good.
Broke the wheel, right?
Yeah. Yeah, just the front right was just kind of torn all the way back, and you're not going any farther. You see him try and go forward, it just pulls itself into a snowbank, and it's just done. There's just nowhere else to go. Neuville had a similar issue. So it was sad to not see those cars finish the event, because they were quick. They were up there with some of the split times. They didn't have any stage wins, but they were very close to it. So there's still potential there. These are still the specialty rounds. I mean, when you know, the first three, Monte Carlo, Sweden, and the high altitude of Mexico are kind of the three specialty events. We get to more of the standard type events once you hit Portugal. So we'll see how it performs when we get to those events. But unfortunately, they had a few issues. And then I was just going to kind of finish off with a couple other quick things. I was talking about the former WRC Academy / JWRC winners. I wanted to see how they turned out. Pontus Tiedemann ended up doing the best out of those in eighth. Craig Breen ended up in ninth. Mm. And Elvin Evans, who's, you know, with the Ford squad, he was actually in ninth for a while, going into the very final power stage. And Colin Clark on the radio is saying, you know, you have to really hand it to Elvin Evans. You know, it's his second event, you know, being with the team. And, you know, he's like, he's saying that, you know, he's just consistently finished, you know, so far. And he's like, you know, I don't want to give him the commentator's curse. All of a sudden you hear, Elvin's stopped on the stage.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, no.
Why would you do that?
Colin actually said, I don't want to give him the commentator's curse. And it happens.
Oh, come on. Goodness.
Ouch. And just to kind of round things out, WRC 2, we don't talk about them too much, but what's interesting about this one is the Carl Kruda, they're all in the Fiesta R5s, because there's really not another car that can compete in the WRC 2 as well as that car. So those are the top three. But what's funny is Carl Kruda ended up actually able to come back 21 seconds in the final stage because he conserved his tires. Apparently, Yari Katama, his tires were just shot. The studs were all gone. And at first, Yari Katama thought he had been – he was in the lead and was able to secure that and thought he had won. And then it turns out that Kuruta ends up taking the win at the end. And Yari Katama was actually jumping up and down, excited that he thought he won. And then actually it was Colin Clark walks up to him. Sorry, it wasn't enough. So Colin had a tough night trying to tell people different things, but kind of a sad thing to think that you won and then find out that you didn't. But on Carl Kruda's side, he was just in shock. He's like, he had to hear it three different times before he realized he had won that. So that was pretty cool. So moving along, some new news. We get into the WRC's, that new Drive DMAC Fiesta Cup.
Yes.
This is, you got the JWRC coming up, but nobody's going to race in that because they can't afford it since they switched to the Citroën DS3 R3 Ts in there. So the turbo cars that are just twice the cost and then some. So they came up with this Drive DMAC Fiesta Cup, and it's all sponsored by M Sport and DMAC. And they finally announced the 12, what do they call it, the Dirty Dozen drivers they selected. They had over 24 people that were trying to get into the list. Some of the names on the list that was just announced just yesterday, that's very interesting. Some names that we knew from the JWRC, Yeri Lemus, Sander Parn, Jose Suarez. These are all guys that have raced in WRC2 or the JWRC before. Max Vatanen, this is Ari Vatanen's son.
I was about to say, that name strikes me as sounding familiar.
Yes, the famous Ari Vatanen. And this is the big news, Crazy Leo is selected as one of the drivers. So that's the North American person when they said somebody from the Americas was going to be racing in the event.
Yep.
It was Crazy Leo. So that'll be exciting to see him. I hope he's got the funds to do a full campaign.
How many cars does he have lined up?
True.
Or at least
I mean, him. I love Crazy Leo, don't get me wrong. But how many cars does he have lined up, right?
Yeah,
I said the same thing about Yari Matti as well, right? Back when he was getting going.
Well, you remember Portugal, right?
On a WRC
oh,
event,
gosh. So. You had to mention Portugal. I think he's still rolling from that.
I absolutely had to bring up Portugal.
Of course. I hope he has the funds to do a full campaign. He's been working all year this last year trying to get this thing going or something of this type going. He didn't race at all in Rally America. He did the Canadian Rally Championship. His big focus has actually been on getting those pace notes right because he had injured himself. I don't remember. He had a skiing accident. That's why he had to sit out a season or most of his season. And so he kind of took that as kind of a chance to reevaluate how he's doing things. And he realized that, you can put any bigger turbo on a car or whatever you want. That's not going to really make you that much faster.
Right.
Getting your pace notes right, that makes you a ton faster. So he actually went to WRC Germany's event and paid to just do a recce of the event so he could get the knowledge of how they do and organize an event there, how to write his own pace notes for that type of event in Europe. He thought that was a good diverse type of stages and whatnot to and conditions to be able to do notes for. And he's been working on nothing but the reason why he won't do Rally America is because they use those pre-printed Jemba notes. They don't do a two-pass recce where you can make your own. The only exception... Go ahead.
Well, the only thing I was going to say is also, isn't there the pace notes are also different in the WRC than they are in America in the sense that there is more the WRC method is more complex than what we see with Rally America.
Well, what makes it different is there aren't any pace. You make your own.
Yeah.
You start with nothing. So it's whatever system you come up with. And Leo's been experimenting with a couple of different systems. Like he'll actually, for a certain condition on the road, there's actually a Finnish word that fits better than anything that he, to quickly describe what he's seeing that works better for that specific kind of corner than what he could have in English or Russian or whatever language that he chooses. So his co-driver is going to have to speak all these different words that could be in different languages. But a lot of drivers have that those very complex, using all these different words to describe something that you or I may not understand. I mean, you got your left five, you know, right six, whatever stuff. But there's some descriptions, you know, with maybe a crest into a tight turning, you know, tightening turn or something like that, mm-hmm. where there is a their own language they might want to do it. By far the most complex notes ever has got to be Petter Solberg. If you've ever heard his co-driver back when Chris Patterson was reading out stuff, you have no idea where he is on the road. He's spitting out so much stuff. And they're in English.
Right.
You know, because he was so detailed on every little thing, every single characteristic along that road, so he could position the car ahead of time. And, it's definitely a tough thing to get those notes right. So that's what Leo's been really focusing on, not to mention trying to get sponsorship dollars and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. He's got some help from Team O'Neill is going to be helping him out, which is great. Obviously some help from I think Ford's helping them out a little bit too, and I can't remember who the other sponsors are, but again, it's just great to see North American that's going to be out on the stages. Sure. First event's going to be in Portugal, so listen up, and I hope that they provide coverage because I'm really excited to see how well he does.
Indeed. So, all right, and let's see, we've got that settled. So we also had a Canadian rally event, right?
Yep. So we had a Canadian Rally Championship first event. Rally Pierce Neige was last weekend. That's their snow rally without any studs. Anton Lestage took the win.
I think
not
Antoine
too surprising.
Would take umbrage to that.
What's that?
Say that there were no studs.
Oh, nice. Look at you.
Yeah, well, he might. I don't know.
Thank you. I'll be here all week.
Sadly, he will.
Pat Richard, try as he might, he just was not able to quite keep up. And so he ended up finishing second. And then actually Crazy Leo's Beast ends up finishing third, but not with Leo at the wheel. The car's been rented out to Alexander Belland, who ended up finishing in third overall. And I'll just read off real quick. In two-wheel drive, we ended up having our very own Chris Greenhouse, who said he's going to be doing the two-wheel drive championship up there. He's not doing Rally America. Mm-hmm. And one of his reasons was about learning how to do better pace notes. So he wanted to learn how to do it better. And so he's competing up there. And he ended up finishing third in the two-wheel drive behind Salmon Dubé, who was in first in two-wheel drive, and Martin Walter, who was second in two-wheel drive. So I should have a posting here soon about how Chris Greenhouse did. So,
all right.
Then we move on to GRC, the Global Rallycross Championship. And what was it you posted here, Mike Weitzel? Nail polish and professional polish combine on Andretti GRC team?
Oh, my goodness.
Perfect.
Nailed it.
Scoop!
It's sad. Of the whole entire announcement, I did cringe a bit when I read that, and I was, to be honest, a little saddened. My heart kind of died a little bit.
That Scoot's in it, or that Andretti's in it, or the car?
I'll go with Scoot. I can oversee an ugly car. I've been watching Formula One the last few years, okay?
Yeah, I was supposed
nice
to say,
nose.
I wouldn't know if can buy a VW. However, when you gut it, make it four-wheel drive, and drop 450 or 540 horsepower
600.
In it. 600 horsepower. Do I hear seven? Seven.
No, you don't.
No, but anyway, we drop a monster engine an all-wheel drive. I don't care what it looks like. You know, it could be pink with purple polka dots and a giant unicorn horn on it. I wouldn't care. I would still have fun.
My daughter probably would have liked the bug better if it looked like that.
It's so much
So yeah, talking about the car, that was probably so. You know, I guess to kind of get over the announcement is the fact that Volkswagen, which we already heard was going to be coming to the GRC, but we didn't know with who, and now we know it's with Andretti Autosport. So Andretti Autosport getting in the mix. The biggest news probably with that is Tanner Faust leaving the Ford squad to go over to Andretti Autosport with a car that isn't even completely done being built yet.
And is not very Tanner Faust.
Show me the money.
Yes.
And here's the other interesting thing on that. Tanner Faust has had such a strong relationship with Rockstar, and it is indeed going to be Rockstar that's going to be branding this vehicle. But VW has such a strong relationship with Red Bull. It's interesting that they were allowed to go that route here in the U.S. But, you know, obviously Red Bull is going to be with Pastrana. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, naturally. But, we lose Tanner Faust not quite on that level to lure the Bucks. I gotta be honest. I'd be going with Mr. Pastrana as well.
Yeah. So the team is going to be Tanner Faust and Scott Speed. Now you guys harp on Scott Speed a bit, but you know what? His actually driving in the GRC has been some of the cleanest.
Get
and
out of this
that's
year.
One reason why he performed well.
And you know, you asked me at the introduction of the show why you were still the intern. You have just made my case. Don't ever say anything positive
about
Scoot. I don't care how clean it is. Quitters never win. Anyways, still sour about the IMS episode, but continue.
We've got Andretti in it with VW. One of the things is apparently the squad in Germany that does the WRC car is going to be helping some of the development.
Okay.
So that bodes well. So they're going to work in concert with, I guess, Andretti Autosport to get this VW Beetle that just looks – yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't care what you say, Doug. It still looks kind of god-awful. The one thing that I want to say about the car, though, real quick, is who are they marketing this to? Because don't you have a manufacturer involved to sell cars?
All I'm saying
At one point, I was thinking maybe VW engineers are basically saying, we're so damn good, we can make anything fast. We'll even make a Beetle.
Race
the bug, Dale.
When the new Beetle came out with its vase on the dashboard and everyone was going around the freaking sunflower or daisy or, oh my God, it was awful, right? I mean, it supplanted the Miata as the chick car.
Nice.
Right?
Yes.
The current Beetle really is a decent mover.
It's hideous. It's hideous.
No.
It can move great, but it's hideous.
No. I have... Oh man, it pains me to say this. I have seen some recent, late model Beetles that have looked pretty good. And why they've looked good.
In comparison to this, yes.
No. I'll tell you why they look good. They look good because they're starting to more closely resemble the 60s version of the bug. One of the things that I really like, and this has nothing to do with how it performs, but the design of their rims, their wheel design, going with the baby half moon hubcaps, simply brilliant. I mean, that took
it back to the 60s, 70s era.
Yes,
sure.
I saw one that was gloss black and with those wheels. I'm like,
if you're going for retro,
that
but retro and racing doesn't necessarily go together.
No.
So here's my comparison to you. Okay, look at the VW Polo, which they actually took some of the heritage, because they own Audi, right?
Right.
So they obviously took some of the heritage of the Audi Quattro classic car in their WRC car, because you got the big fender flares with the sharp edges, right?
Mm-hmm.
They made that look. You look at it from the rear, and you got those little kind of box holes. You know, remember the Quattro S1? Mm-hmm. It has some of that look and feel of that classic car mixed in with the modern Polo.
Yeah.
Fine. You got this VW here, and it's still just a VW. I don't know what's trying to.
Well, no. But,
I guess
okay.
maybe
no,
back
I...
in the day there was some rally crossing going on with VWs. Maybe that's what it's supposed to.
No. I get what you're saying, but how many Polos are sold here in the U.S. versus how many Beetles?
How many Golfs, though?
I tell you what, I see a lot more Beetles than I do Golfs.
But who's driving them?
a lot of people, a bunch of hipsters, really, mainly.
Oh, well, if that's their target. But well, would hipsters be, aren't they too green to watch racing?
Hipsters are signing up for ride-sharing programs.
Right.
No, I think it depends.
Portlandia area, okay?
No, I know. I get it. But I think it depends on the person, but I think there's a broader market for the Beetle than there is the Golf. And to be honest, you look at the Golf, that is not an exciting and iconic car. It just isn't. It is boring to look at. It is a dreadful, tired old car. Does it move really, really well? Yes, especially the GTI, right?
Oh, hell yeah.
But it is a stale design. Not everybody loves the look of the Beetle. I get that. But it is very distinctly different than any other vehicle on the market.
It definitely has an iconic shape that
shouts VW. And so, you know,
so it's brand market versus vehicle marketing.
Yes. That's what it should be, right? I mean, let's think about why manufacturers were in racing in the first place. It was always win on Sunday, sell on Monday, right?
Oh,
that was the philosophy. And so, you know, I am totally on board with them racing the Beetle. I think it's a great decision.
I'll give you a case in point of why that doesn't work, Doug. This season, 2014 in F1, say Mercedes wins a race on Sunday. Monday, nobody's going to be lining up to buy a new Mercedes because they saw how hideous that car looked on Sunday.
Well, you know,
I don't want to nose like that.
You know, open wheel racing, I don't think the formula works because you're not looking at a car that looks like what you can buy. So a little bit different. I mean, that's one thing that I think also makes rally cars, you know, so whether it's GRC or whether it's, you know, in regular rally, makes it such a unique sport other than maybe sports car racing. It actually looks like something you can buy.
Now, I will say that that's the way it is now, but it didn't used to be. I remember watching Rick Mears win the 500, and as soon as he crossed the checkered, you know, the very first commercial they went to was Chevrolet.
Yep.
You're congratulating Rick Mears on winning the Indianapolis 500 in a Chevrolet powered car. You know.
Yep.
So, you know, it even in
they're selling the engine.
It used to be, you know, our technology, our know-how put that driver, you know, in victory lane. Think what we can do for you. You know, we've lost some of that. But, you know, that still doesn't negate the whole, you know, the fundamental principle, and as you say, especially when it comes to rally cars and sports cars that have a closer connection to what you would go to the dealership and actually see on the lot.
Well, one last thing I say, I think Sean mentioned something really good, and when I was kind of all over Twitter about the look of this car, and one of the comments I got back that I finally heard that actually made a lot of sense is, you know what, girls watch Global Rallycross, mm-hmm. They're into the whole X Games stuff.
Yeah,
Tanner Faust has a lot of girls following him.
He's a studly gent.
But you know, maybe that's part of their market thing too. I don't know, but you know, it's definitely an interesting car. Apparently, the first event or two, it might not be running. He'll be driving possibly one of the what's his name, Andreas Ericsson, Marklund, Antoine Marklund, who's a Swedish guy who races the Polo version of a GRC car over in Europe with a European Rally Championship. One of those cars might come over here in the meantime to be used until they get the VW the Beetle done. So we might not see it right away, but it's definitely an interesting concept. Kind of rounding out the GRC coverage, there is the schedule finally announced. We don't know what the TV schedule looks like to go along with it, so I'm not sure what channel it's going to be on yet, if it's still going to be on ESPN2. I'm guessing it will. But it is still technically a Global Rallycross Championship because of one event in Barbados.
Nice.
only in the USA can we have a global championship and either never or only do one stop across an international line somewhere.
World Series.
Hey, right. Like Canadians.
That's right. That's
it. Yes, they comprise the world. A.
Yes.
A.
I got some flack from that from one of the GRC guys, and I'm like, okay, yeah, you were the first one to have a global presence with the Global X Games that turned out to be a flop. Fine. You know? Those events sucked.
European Rallycross? I think that's international.
It is, actually. That one switches over to being the World Rallycross Championship as of this year. So it actually is a full FIA World Rallycross, WRX, they're calling it.
Hmm.
Not to be confused with the Subaru car. Anyway, so the schedule is coming up in May 17th, 18th, they're going to be in Barbados. June 7th, Austin, Texas. That'll be, of course, the X Games. June 21st and 22nd, they're going to be in Washington, D.C. That'll be interesting. New York, New York on July 19th and 20th. Then they're going out to Charlotte, North Carolina. In August, they're going to be in Detroit and then at Daytona. September, they're going to L.A., that'll be an X Games event there probably. And then Seattle, Washington. They're going to be coming up in my neck of the woods. So I'm going to have to check them out. September 26th and 27th. I'm guessing that'll be out at Dirtfish. And then there'll be on November 5th. The last event will be back down at the SEMA Las Vegas show. So nice. It'll be interesting to see how the tracks turn out this year. I was kind of doing a back and forth with one of the GRC guys, you know, again, joking about how it's not very international, but, you know, how very global. But I did ask him, you know, they'll say the only thing that really matters is how good are the tracks, because they sucked last year. They started getting better, but they've had such a problem with this being more of a demolition derby. Whoever gets out the first corner, you know, survives it, is likely going to win. And we got to get away from that. And he said specifically that's why we see the schedule we do. These are tracks that they've got in their mind in these locations that they think will be superior, and they won't have the bottlenecks that they had this last year. So it's a wait and see, but I'm excited that there are changes and one that's going to be somewhat local.
Excellent. Well, that's fantastic. Well, with that being said, the next events that we have on tap for Rally is we have the Rally in the 100 Acre Woods here in Missouri, the Open Paddock Home Event, as it's called. That will be February 21st through the 22nd. We got the big guys coming to play, Block, Lestage, Higgins, and Pastrana. So again, it looks like it's going to be probably the crown jewel on the calendar, to be honest. Weather. Rain.
Weather looks a little sketch.
Yeah, well,
okay, well, all right, let me back up. You know, because right now, let me be very specific. Pull it up the website right now, and the temperature is, survey says, 10.
Negative 7.
Yay, we're in single digit or double digits. Woo!
Yes.
Just barely. We spent most of today actually in single digits. It has been, you know, anyone here in the Midwest knows how bitterly cold it has been this last month. It is absolutely suck noodles. And I've been really, really worried about, you know, being out on stage, you know, in the, you know, single digits, you know, double digit below wind chill type of, you know, dangerous cold weather. You know, I know I've got a little bit more insulation, shall we say, than you do, Mr. Peachin.
Indeed.
Say no more. Yeah, still, you know, I was not looking forward to it. But it does look like that the forecast for Salem is for at least above zero temperatures. You know, we're looking at, let's see if I find this right.
Do you guys still have a bunch of snow on the ground?
Yeah, I've got about half an inch, or half,
mm-hmm.
inch, half a foot.
Oh, yeah.
Half a foot of snow, about 6 inches of snow still on the ground.
Yep.
But anyway, so looks like Thursday, when we're down there for tech, and Mr. Weitzel, I don't think you're going to be down there on Thursday. You're looking at...
Not for tech. I'll be there Thursday evening.
Okay. You'll be there for beer time on Thursday.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're looking at 60 degrees on
and
Thursday.
And 2 a.m. White Castle.
Ah, nice. Make sure you turn on the fan, all right?
Oh, God.
When you get rid of your White Castles, turn on the fan. I don't want to walk in there the next morning and go, oh, God, roadkill.
Sliders, baby, sliders.
And get this, Mr. Weitzel. The predicted high on Friday, the first day of the rally, 63 beautiful degrees.
And rainy.
With 25-mile-an-hour winds and thunderstorms.
Shit.
And then thunderstorms all night long. And then, guess what we're going to have for Saturday?
What's that? Snow?
53-degree temperatures and thunderstorms. And Sean?
Yep.
Saturday night, snow.
Snow? Oh, my goodness. This is like the truest of the true when it comes to all-weather rallies, man.
Do you remember the 09 rally when we first met?
Oh my goodness, that was the worst. That was so bad. It was snowing so much.
I know, right?
Dude, the drive back to my hotel, I was staying up closer to 70 for some dumb reason. I didn't know what I was doing.
Holy crap.
Regardless of the story, the fact of the matter is, dude, the ice, the road was nothing but a solid sheet of ice. It was horrendous.
So I think we're looking at just a complete mud fest, and I'm keeping the snow tires on the car. I might not need them for snow, but I think Mr. White, so we will definitely need them for the mud.
Yeah, a lot of fun. I'll be bringing the Subaru, so I have no worries.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have a tow hook?
So it looks like tire choice is going to be a big deal for that event, then.
Exactly.
Not just for you guys, but for the racers as well.
Start saying we're talking about the drivers or the spectators.
Giving up on the Fiesta, and he's bringing the Gravedigger.
Oh, nice. I love it.
Or the tracked version of the.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
What is it? The Ford Raptor or whatever it was that he
tracks
on. The F-150
Raptor done with the tracks on it.
Well, they did
Raptor
with
tracks.
The Subaru back in the day as well, as I remember.
He did. He did it with the Subaru and the Fiesta.
Yep.
Yeah. He likes those fun little toying around projects. And, you know, considering where he lives there in Colorado with the snow, kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah.
Also,
be interesting.
Also, next up, we've got WRC Mexico, and that is March 6th through 9th. So that will tie in nicely with the upcoming schedule. That is the next major event on the schedule before any of the Open Wheel Championships kick off.
Yep, and I just got actually a tweet here from a friend of mine that I follow on Twitter, and he's saying already there's 490,000 roadside spectators expected for Mexico.
Damn.
Wow.
500,000.
Okay, wow. Now, is that combined over the entire stretch of the rally, or is that single day?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
Because Mr. White,
they are Catholic,
right?
So
it's bigger than the 500.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, The 500 has always advertised itself as the biggest single-day sporting event in the world.
Yeah.
I'll have to run that down.
Talking about close to 500,000, and it really depends on how they're doing the accounting.
It's how many people show up at each of the observation areas on the stages and what have you. And then, anyway, go ahead. Moving on.
Yes, well, moving on. Let's talk about Formula One. That's what we have next on tap. Not a whole lot of news, but we are tracking some possible changes to the qualification format. Just as NASCAR has moved to copy Formula One's qualification, F1 decides it's time to change.
Yeah, and the changes really are looking at a way to – and again, not sure what's going to happen on this, but the teams are going to meet in Bahrain on February 21st with the FIA, and they will discuss potential changes to the qualifying format going forward for this season. This is last hour changes, but yep. Potentially changing the qualifying format, especially in Q3 when people are electing not to run whatsoever.
You should be forced to run.
Yeah, and that's what they're looking at doing, is forcing people to run, and they're kicking around ideas such as giving out another set of tires or what have you for it. Mm-hmm. Some people have said, you know, why not just go for the old free-for-all one-hour-long session? But most likely that's not going to happen, even though I think I still prefer the old one-hour session.
Mm.
That was crazy.
True.
But other things that potentially are being, you know, I don't think any of us have any real bone in that fight. It's just a potential change. It's not a big deal. And if they do it, it will be better for the spectacle, especially if they give them another set of tires. Agreed?
Agreed. I think that's what it boils down to when you look at what the guys are talking about on the the teams, especially with strategies and whatnot, is always, well, we're going to elect to save the tires. We're going to elect to save this tires because we'll have an extra set of, I don't know, let's just say, you know, the super softs or whatever. We'll have an extra set of the super softs, and we would much prefer to use those. But, you know, that's – I'm all for that. But, you know, yeah, I think you're right. Offer another set of tires. That way teams can go out there and run. Or even if you decide not to do that, I say, you know, penalize teams and make them start in the back of the grid if they decide not to run. And I'm saying it must be within 107 – you know, you need to run. No sandbagging bull crap.
A valid lap.
Yes, yeah. Where it's like, oh, well, I'm going to run a lap of 5 minutes as Kimmy is licking the Haagen-Dazs as he, like, drives around the track.
with a little ice cream bar there.
He's like, well, what do you want from me? I decided that I was going to do the lap, and nobody said I had to drive fast, so I ate the ice cream. And you know what? Then he's going to be off, and he's going to be off getting shit-faced somewhere. So, you know, the fact is I
happy
think the team's
Kimmy.
Exactly. Happy Kimmy for the race.
Oh, can you imagine Kimmy on track with Finlandia?
Exactly. Nice. I can't.
Oy.
But I mean, you know, at the end of the day, teams need to be made, you know, need to be forced to run a solid lap, make an attempt for pole position. And you know what? At that point, you know, maybe give the guy who runs for pole position, give him like 30, you know, not 30 points, but give him like 2 points or something. Because at the end of the day, these guys are like, well, we got a better chance in the race, and that's where the championship's won. Well, actually, you kind of need to be good at everything. And when you look at teams like Mercedes, they don't even finish that well when they save that extra set of tires. So it's a complete waste of everybody's time. They don't get anything out of it because the super softs usually only last like 2.5 laps anyways before they're completely garbage. So, you know, people should just be made to run, and I truly think that maybe give points for pole position. I mean, because Red Bull.
Well, crap. That was my fault. We had a bunch more Formula One stuff to share with you, but unfortunately the recorder crapped out on us, or on me, I should say. It's all my bad. Anyway, we'll point and laugh at Formula One here next week. Sorry for the delay in releasing this latest episode 218. We'll see you next week. ¶¶